Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. So welcome back to my channel. And I wish they weren't drilling just as I'm trying to film outside the house of John Osborne. And you can see the blue plaque there, slightly obscured by the tree. But mercifully this time of year, there aren't many leaves to cover up the blue plaque. So John Osborne was a celebrated playwright of the mid-20th century here in the United Kingdom. So he's born in Fulham, London. We're here in Hammersmith. I don't think this is his birth house, but he did live here for some time. We'll go a bit closer. Oh yeah, he lived in 1951 to 55. So John Osborne is probably considered the father of gritty realism, a new genre of theatre. So his father was an artist and an advertising copywriter from Wales. His mother was a Londoner and she was an alewife. I'm not sure if he had any siblings actually, but they moved to Ewell, which is just southwest of London, for a more bourgeois existence. He managed to go to a minor public school during the Second World War. He was too young for the war. And his father died when John Osborne was in his early teens. So John Osborne, he was a born rebel, really, and particularly wayward once his father had left him, felt cheated by life, and his father had not died fighting in the war or anything like that. So he said he was expelled from school. He did obtain a school certificate, though. That's a bit like A-levels before they came out. But remember, in those days, very, very few people had any qualifications. Most people left school at 14 with no qualifications whatsoever. So he was clearly bright, but hadn't you know, gone to university or any post-school education. And he drifted to London. He did various jobs, and then got into playwriting. So although brainy, he was not scholarly, if you see what I mean. I'm not sure how he avoided national service, because in those days, even after the Second World War, young men were called up for 2 years. They could choose between the army, the Royal Navy and the Royal Air Force, unless they were medically unfit or unless they were a conscientious objector. And I don't think he claimed to be a conscientious objector on religious grounds. About the only ground you could be exempted, or if you studied medicine first or something like that. Anyway, so he felt that British theatre was deeply disingenuous, it was too chintzy, it was looking through the world through these sepia and all rose-tinted spectacles, it was too middle-class and middle-aged, and maybe middle-brow as well, wanted to reflect the harsh realities of life, particularly for proletarians, and show how life had moved on since the Second World War, the welfare state, the Labour government, and things like that. And what was life really like for ordinary people with problems, people who were neither heroes or villains, but rather mixed, morally mixed, show the world in shades of grey, and the world in some ways was rather monochromatic after the war, with rationing, with shortages of just about everything, with the bomb damage not being repaired for well over 10 years after the war. So he went on holiday to Morecambe, which is by Morecambe Bay, northwest England, the Irish Sea, and there, sitting on a deck chair one summer in the 1950s, in 17 days, he penned what was widely regarded as his magnum opus, and that is Look Back in Anger. And it's semi-autobiographical. It's based about a lower middle class young man who's living in Derby, that's a Midlands town. He's fairly newly married. They have no children, he and his wife, but she's having an affair with a local dentist. Things are going wrong for him. There's angst, there are rows, there's too much alcohol being consumed, but there's not enough money. And that's what his life was like, really. He wed 5 times, but only had 1 child. Now, his marriages were not helped by his frequent infidelities and his heavy drinking in the early days, though he did clean up his act later on. So he certainly had the artistic temperament. Remember, divorce in those days was much trickier than it is now, and there was no such thing as a no-fault divorce till the 90s. It was a very pricey thing, and it was often regarded as scandalous. It's amazing that Prime Minister Sir Anthony Eden, particularly as a conservative, was able to get away with divorce in 1955, and indeed remarriage to Clarissa Churchill, as a niece of Winston Churchill. So that really made his name. Now, a number of theatres rejected it until finally it was staged. It was an instant smash hit. It was the first of its kind. And so gritty realism has really transcended British theatre and television ever since. So they say it's quite different from American dramas and soaps, which often are a bit too idealistic, showing in the upper middle class, attractive people who often don't have very serious problems, and life is really a bed of roses, but not so in Look Back in Anger. So it certainly spoke to the generation which had come of age shortly after the Second World War, who were frustrated with the drabness of life, with the small C conservatism of governments, both Labour and Conservative. Now, though he was vaguely a man of the left, he wasn't party political. He wasn't Marxist like a lot of intellectuals at the time. So it was a smash hit, and it was performed in other countries. It was actually staged in Moscow. He was able to travel there for it. So from that time onwards, he was able to live by his quill. And he'd been living in the Midlands, as I said. But he produced numerous other plays for the stage, for television, and he became something of a celebrity. John Osborne, he knew Brendan Behan, who was a presence on the scene, the theatrical scene of London in the late 1950s with The Hostage, On Girl, and so on. A Borster boy, though he died in 1964. And he was interested in John Osborne. He was curious about Irish republicanism, though he wasn't remotely Irish himself. But it seemed to be fairly harmless in the early 60s, as the Troubles had not yet started, and everybody assumed that conflict was over. So Osborne, he began his political odyssey to the libertarian right, though I'd not really ever actually voted conservative. And yet he found himself having rather a lot of money by the 1980s and bought himself a handsome house in Clune, which is in the Shropshire countryside, and set himself up as a country squire. He started attending the Church of England, donating to repair his local church and things like that. And his biography reflects that. I think the second volume is Almost a Gentleman. But he was a diabetic, partly from his heavy drinking earlier in his life, which contributed to his premature death at the age of 65 in 1994, him having been born in 1929. What else could I say? Because he'd been a sort of an evacuee. That's one of the reasons he'd gone to boarding school in southwest England. I can't remember the name of the school. It has subsequently closed down. So he's a bit of a grand old man of letters. And indeed, one of the volumes of his autobiography was later turned into a film for television. So he was no longer the carousing hellraiser he had been in his youth, certainly by his 50s, was almost co-opted by the establishment, but well worth seeing his work. So that is John Osborne, lived here in Hammersmith. As I say, he'd been born in Fulham, which was rather less salubrious then than it is now. It's been a very she-she area, certainly since the 90s. Right, so thank you so much for watching my channel, and please subscribe to me on Patreon, and watch on, and donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. That's all small letters. Callahan spelled C-A-L-L-A-G-H-A-N. And just to show how pucker this area is, where his house was in the 1950s, when he started to make it financially, was just across the road from St Paul's Girls' School, one of the poshest girls' schools in Londinium. So you're on Caithness Road, that's where he used to live, named after that most northerly county in Scotland. But although, of course, to buy a decent house in a decent part of London was not expensive until the 1980s. The population of London was falling. So after Look Back in Anger, his plays became very much in demand, and people would stage anything that he wrote. So he really was epoch-making. In that script, the long silences, the sultriness, the sulking, the blazing rows, and so on, the dysfunctionality of many marriages. And he wrote Wherever You Knew. That is St Paul's Girls' School. So that's how close he was to it. Here we are on Brook Green. Okay, I'll switch it off now. Goodbye.